Ryan and Doc exchanged a quick glance. The time for subterfuge had passed. They needed to be ready for combat. Throwing off their costumes, they hastily untied Jack. Jack shook himself, stumbling as he attained his feet.
Leave me. I'm okay.
He was far from okay, however. Despite the adrenaline rush that had started to feed life back into his limbs, he was still nowhere near fighting strength, and it was all he could do to stand on his own. He had no idea how Ryan and Doc had materialized from nowhere. He was equally surprised to see JB, Mildred, and Christy standing near a faltering Marissa. He could see the crowd, could see the guards rushing the platform, and most of all, he could see the bellowing, wounded figure of Dr. Jean staggering along the lip of the shrine. Total chaos was about to envelop them, and if he was to stand any chance of getting himself and Marissa out of this, he had to look after her and make sure that his friends could fight without having to protect him. Lurching, Jack made his way over to Marissa. Watching them go, Ryan knew that he and the others could get on with the business of staying alive. Guards poured out of the front of the old courthouse building and onto the platform of the shrine. The sect chief, Diamond, was at the forefront. He charged straight into a hail of fire from JB's Uzi, which stitched a line of bloody spots from his left shoulder down to his right hip, throwing him backward into a group of men on his heels, tripping them. They became easy targets for the first wave of fire from Mildred, Brian, and Christy. To the left of the stricken Diamond, coming from another set of doors, was another phalanx of guards. Doc wasted no time in centering his Lama on this group and letting them feel the full force of the shot charge. The white-hot metal pellets ripped through them, tearing at flesh and bone, spreading a fine mist of blood across the group. The group were scattered, some dead, others wounded too heavily to return fire. Driven back by the hail of fire, the guards were pushed into the old courthouse. And now the crowd was starting to become aware, at the sight of their baron stumbling around the platform, blood dripping from his guts. As they had discarded their costumes, the intruders had revealed clothing that wasn't of the swamp dwellers or part of the rebel army. Whoever they were the enemy, and they had to be destroyed. The crowd in the square began to rain blaster fire onto the shrine, not thinking about who was in the direct line of fire. Standing upright, blood pumping from the slash in his guts, Dr. Jean was peppered by hand blaster and rifle fire, his skin puckering as the bullets hit home all across his body. In their frenzy, the crowd didn't even notice when his corpse finally collapsed and fell from the platform. But something happened the moment that Dr. Jean finally perished. Ryan and his people, now clustered together in the center of the platform between the sacrificial slabs, could feel it. The atmosphere had changed again. The Baron may have used old tech and jolt to instill the hypnotic suggestion into his people, but it was he himself that they had followed, his personality that controlled them. And they had just seen him killed before their very eyes. They had no leader. They had nothing but an insatiable bloodlust. So, they began to turn on one another. Attention that had been focused on the platform was now turned back on themselves. Day-to-day disagreements and petty rivalries carried greater significance in the heat of the moment. The villagers turned their guns on one another. The square turned into a heaving mass of people indulging in a firefight and in hand-to-hand combat. At such close range, there were plenty of casualties. It was beginning to look as though the walled bill would wipe itself out. Scarcely able to believe that they were no longer under attack themselves, Ryan's people were transfixed by the carnage that was taking place before them.
Ryan, look!
More sectmen were making their way from the rear toward the sets of double doors, primed to repeat the attack that had seen the first wave wiped out.
Fuck this!
JB took a grenade from his munitions bag, pulled the pin, and tossed it underhand into the lobby of the building. Hot metal fragments from the detonating grenade decimated the guards within, and a few fragments were flung clear of the doors and out over the platform. Coming out from their cover behind the slabs, the companions headed for the lobby, ignoring the carnage behind them. As long as the Vill dwellers were intent on killing one another, it meant that they weren't paying any attention to the members of the ritual. Mildred and JB held back to cover Jack and Marissa as they staggered across the platform toward the ruined lobby.
Think you'll be okay moving?
Jack could only nod. He could feel strength returning to him with every step as the adrenaline pumping through him and sheer willpower fought off the effects of the drug. But Marissa wasn't doing as well. Perhaps because of her smaller frame, perhaps because she wasn't as strong, she was still weak on her feet. She tried to run and half stumbled. Mildred took her arm.
You go, Jack. I'll take her.
The group entered the lobby of the building. The shrine and the heavy masonry in front of the building acted as a shield for the noise in the square, and they seemed to be in an almost unnatural calm. The lobby was littered with bloodied corpses and filled with smoke. The walls were damaged and blackened by the blast, and the floor was covered with debris from the explosion. Brick, masonry, plaster, and wood.
Damn it. Where do we go from here?
I don't know, but at least that grenade bought us some time.
Despite their momentary safety, they weren't out of the woods yet. Escaping the Ville had to be their number one priority. Forming into a line, with Jack and Marissa sheltered in the middle, they set off to canvas the building. The lower levels were deserted. With Dr. Jean gone, and the hypnotic effects of the drugs and old tech causing a desire to fight anyone over anything, the only occupants of the rooms they checked were corpses or those who were close to death. The victors in those particular fights having left the building to take up arms in the square. Moving up the staircase, keeping tight formation with blasters ready, they traversed the entire building. On the sixth floor, they came across an open plan office. It housed a series of computers and noise generators linked by cables to the vid machines that were still pumping out the propaganda about the now deceased Baron to a crowd that was no longer listening and no longer cared.
This is where it's coming from.
Can you deactivate it?
You sure you want to do that? If they're not out for each other, would they come looking for us?
No more than if we stumble on them by accident while they're like that. You take this away from them, and they're going to see what they've done to one another. Hell, they're not going to know what to do.
Can't be any worse one way or another. Shut it off.
Christy shook her head.
Some of this stuff is really complex, more than anything I've seen before. If I screw with it and get it wrong, I could make things worse. You want my honest opinion? You really want to make it shut down for good, I'd say blast the shit out of it.
Ryan beckoned for them to pull back to the doorway, in case the shorting of the comp circuits caused a fire or a small explosion in the room.
JB, you want to do this?
No. No. No, let me. It's my people who suffer because of that shit, so I'm the one who should finally end it.
Marissa held out her hands for the M4000. JB eyed her appraisingly, trying to judge if she was up to the task. She still looked a little dizzy from the jolt, but her expression was set and firm. He could tell that she wouldn't take no for an answer, and so held out the blaster to her. There was no danger of a fire spreading, as the few flames that had been produced flickered and died, with nothing to feed them among the metal of the old tech.
It's over.
They waited until daylight, watching the Ville destroy itself from the top of the old courthouse building. They stocked up on supplies by looting the deserted building's vast kitchen. Through the night, the inhabitants of the walled Ville of Lafayette waged war, sporadic bursts of blaster fire and outbreaks of actual fire occurring at random around the Ville. From the roof, they were able to get a panoramic view of the settlement and could see the same patterns repeated all over. For some reason, the old courthouse was left alone. Perhaps because it had the shrine in front of it, and even in their confused state, freed from the hypnotic bonds of the Baron now that the vid screens were blank and silent, they still held a fear of the place. By the middle of the following morning, a kind of calm had descended over the Ville. A few fires still burned, and there was the occasional crackle of blaster fire, but for the most part, the people had fallen into a kind of stupor, worn from the fighting of the previous night, and dazed about what to do next. Ryan gathered his people in the Baron's old chambers.
Time for us to leave. I figure the best thing we can do is get hold of a Sekwag and try to drive out as far as possible. Marissa, there's a chance that some of your people could have survived. They might be trying to get back to your Ville. Maybe we can pick some of them up along the way. If they can avoid the Sek patrols who are coming back. I figure it'd be good if you were there to meet them.
Leaving the old courthouse, keeping the same formation as the previous night, they searched for a vehicle. It didn't take them long to find one. All the wags had been deserted, and some had been set ablaze. Ryan and JB sat in the cab, with the others on the bench seats on the open back. Keeping triple red as they drove through the Ville, as a precaution, they found a defeated atmosphere about the walled Ville, even though the only battle had been among the Ville dwellers. People looked on blank-eyed as the wag passed them, unable even to register curiosity. When they reached the gates, they found them gaping wide open, the SMG posts along the walls deserted. Wags were scattered around the entrance, left by returning Sec patrols, who found they had no leadership anymore, and who had rushed into the build to take part in the firefight within. Some of the Sec men sat by their Wags now, returning to them, as they had little idea what else they could do with themselves. They sat and watched as the travelers drove past. Without his charismatic figurehead, the reign of Dr. Jean had ended within hours. The great empire he had planned to build, little more than dust. As the Wag ground to a halt, where the swamp became too impenetrable for a four-wheeled vehicle to proceed, they considered that this had been a Pyrrhic victory. They had defeated Dr. Jean, but at the cost, it seemed, of all those who had remained united against him. So it was with a weary tread and heavier hearts that they made their way through the hidden paths of the swamp to where the settlement lay hidden. Scouts who kept watch on the paths sent ahead word of their arrival, so that they were greeted by Beausoleil when they entered the ville. Those who had been left behind gathered with the old man. To Marissa and Jack, it seemed a pitifully small number of old men, old women, and children.
So, you reached Lafayette in time to save them. No one else.
No one else has made it back yet?
Beausoleil shook his head. Later, Ryan told the assembled throng what had happened. The others left it to him. And for her part, Marissa was glad not to have to talk about the action she now saw as ripping the heart from her ville.
I suppose you'll say you told me so.
Ain't no blame to put anywhere. Never forced no one to do nothing. Besides which, Dr. Jean's gone. So whatever comes next has to be better. Sometimes it just costs more than Jack to get things done.
How can you say that? Nearly everyone is dead.
Things is as they is. Don't expect me to go on feeling bad to make you feel better.
The old man turned and walked away, leaving Marissa to start sobbing on Jack's shoulder. Over the next few days, some survivors did make it back. They had tales of how they had run through the streets of the walled ville, hiding while the firefights raged, then made their way out past blank-eyed and lost souls wandering the broken ville. Some carried injuries that had slowed them. Others had stayed to try to loot before running for home, hoping to bring things back with them. Eventually, the stream of refugees trickled and died. About 16 of the rebel army had managed to stay alive and free, making it back to the hidden settlement. If nothing else, this made Marissa feel better. They now had a few more people back to band together and come out of hiding. But there was nothing left to hide from. Now they could start to build a new community, a new life. Marissa wanted to build it with Jack, but the albino hunter had no wish to stay.
Why? I thought we was your people, and you were one of us. And I thought that you and me, that...
Nothing here now. This is your land, your people. Maybe I've been away too long, and maybe not really belong anywhere anymore. Except maybe with them.
Jack looked over to where the companions were preparing to leave. J.B. and Mildred had been distributing ammo and med supplies as needed before they set out for the redoubt they had originally been headed for. They figured that Dr. Jean's men would have wandered away after his fall, and they could enter undisturbed. If nothing else, a few isolated guards would present little problem. As Jack watched the companions, he knew that they were his people. When he had chosen to leave with them the first time, when he had returned to them after avenging the murder of his wife and child, they shared bonds that no one else could understand. How could he explain that to Marissa? Jack took her hands in his and looked in her eyes.
Another time, another place. Maybe this was home. Maybe I'll always be looking for home. Thought I found it, but I was wrong. Home is with them. Wherever we find it together, maybe. But even with you here, this isn't it.
So, how you know?
Know when I find it. Until then, can't stop searching.
Deathlands Strontium Swamp is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King-Williams, Nanette Savard, Karen Carbone, David Coyne, Kate Torrey, Casey Jones, Michael Replogle, and Ken Jackson. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton and Brian Rogers. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Dan Smith, Matt Webb, Nathaniel Perry, Brian Patton, and Chris Rowan. Script adapted for graphic audio by Casey Jones. If you enjoy Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.cuttingaudio.com.